Welcome to a very special episode of Eye to Eye, the weekly podcast talk show all about passion, flow, and creativity. So while the host can change, the heart behind it remains the same. I am your guest host this week, Lizzie Renault, and my guest today is...
Allison Chains.
Hi, Allison.
Hi, Lizzie.
I guess what everybody needs to know at the start of this episode is this is... 2.0. We've done this once already.
Yep.
And I was like, no, I'm going to do it this way. I'm just going to set tracks in OBS and stepped above my pay grade, and it only recorded Allison. So,
I mean, luckily, like, I smoke enough pot and talk enough for a living that I don't remember what I said for most of this. So, like, I was worried today when we were like, okay, we're going to re-record today. I was like, what did I say before? Do I need to be worrying, like, about saying the same stuff? And then I was like, don't worry about it. Don't even try.
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing. But then I was like, oh, we'll just naturally take it in different paths, right?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. So I'm really happy that we get to do this again today. And yeah. I suppose that we should get into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Welcome to Eye to Eye. This week, I'm here with Allison Chains, Toronto's drag sweetheart, as I like to say. Allison's, in my mind, pretty much a drag household name in Toronto and a real special person to a lot of younger drag kids coming up, and also the star of a lot of the content that I produce on Speakeasy Tattoos Twitch channel. Allison, what are your pronouns?
Like he, him out of drag, she, her in drag, but like she, her out of drag too. I'm not too pronoun specific, just don't use male pronouns with me while I'm in drag because I put in way too much work to be called he once I'm in it all.
I was saying to Allison earlier, I was hanging out with somebody today who refers to drag queens as he, which I'm like so not used to, and it kept like jarring. We had the conversation. Like,
because
what?
That person only sees them out of drag.
Yeah,
I
totally.
Should mention it's not them like making a point.
Yes. Still though. How about you describe yourself in your own words? I think you'll do a better job than I will.
Wow. Well, I'm a Toronto drag performer and a event host and a, you know what? I used this moniker to describe Coco Peru when we interviewed her last week. So I'm going to call myself as well a professional talker. I run a bunch of different events in Toronto. I've been doing drag in Toronto for, I've been performing for just over 7 years. I'm an artist. I'm a visual artist. I'm a musician. And I am all around a creative tornado of misdirected energies.
Of all the skills and talents you just listed, which passion do you feel came first for you?
Oh, that's actually really interesting, but I would probably feel like visual art came first. Like I was always a drawer. Like I always, my mom, I have really early childhood memories of being given a big roll of like craft paper, like but just like really cheap, like newsprint or bond paper, like a big roll of it. And my mom would just lay out, like put it on the table and I could roll out as however much as I wanted and cover it in markers and stickers and paint and stamps. I loved stamps. Oh my God. So I would say like visual art definitely came first, but I've always also been like very into music. Like I had a very, not a super musical family growing up, but my siblings and I all played instruments for 10 years, but I'm the only one who really stuck with it. But my dad is like a big, big music fan and grew up in an era of like, my dad was born in 49. So he like grew up in an era of like so much good music. So he has like a ton of connection to like 50s, like doo-wop-y stuff and like Motown. And then, you know, he was like 20 years old during the Summer of Love and he's a huge Beatles fan. So it's like my dad has always kind of secondhand imparted a lot of good music on me. So I would say like, yeah, arts first, music is probably second.
You also are a good interview because you know a lot about a breadth of topics. Is that something similar to music? Did your parents kind of introduce you to all kinds of media growing up?
Yeah, it wasn't so much. I don't have a lot of recollection of my parents being like, this is this, this is this. But it was more that they would play things and we would all enjoy them and we would get to like consume them and we could ask questions and things like that. But there was all sorts of different stuff around for sure. I feel like we were really encouraged to kind of go off and discover what we enjoyed, which I really appreciate. And also, like, I grew up in an era where accessing my own media that I could enjoy was pretty easy. Because like right around my like teenage years when I was starting to forge my own like musical interests and stuff was like the Napster, Morpheus, Kazaa boom.
Right.
And then like LimeWire by the time I was in like university and stuff like that.
Do you remember how old you were when YouTube came out?
Do you know what's funny is I always measure it on watching the video Shoes by Liam Kyle Sullivan.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Like that feels really early YouTube to me. And I remember watching those in like grade 10 geography class or something like that. So
okay.
I was probably like 15, 16, 14, 15, 16. We're probably like around the ages when YouTube started being big.
Were you much of an internet user before that?
Oh yeah, I like loved the internet. I like spent a lot of time on my dad's computer playing like online games with people from far away. Like I was really into this game called, oh my God, we talked about this last time. this game called MOTAS, which stood for Mystery of Time and Space, where you would be like locked in a room and you would have to figure out how to get out by like, find a screwdriver in the closet, put the screwdriver into the keyhole in the lock and put a poster under the door so the key on the other side falls onto the poster. But it had like a chat room function so you could like chat with people from all over the world while you were doing it.
Was it just text-based or was it actually images?
It was images as well. And it was like flash animated. It was okay. Like, it was pretty simple. Right. And I loved that. But yeah, other than that, like the things I mostly used the internet for were like reading about video game cheat codes, and I was really obsessed with this website called allrecipes.com that would like maybe it was like Top Secret Recipes, where it would have like leaked info on how restaurants like made their stuff. I remember
oh my
finding
gosh
that really
so
cool.
I feel like my dad loves to buy me cookbooks that have like that in it.
Oh my God.
How important was being online to you vis-a-vis where you grew up?
Well, it was pretty important because, like, I went to school, like, 45 minutes away from where I lived. And so I didn't really have a lot of a social life, like, outside of school, mm-hmm. which is, like, led to basically everything I ended up enjoying. Is, like, it really makes a lot of sense that I was spending a lot of time on the internet. but it was pretty important because I was always, like, on MSN with people and, like, ICQ and, like, I loved online chatting with my friends. I remember when I got my first webcam, that was really big that we could see each other. But it was so wild because it was like we would just leave them on and then like do stuff and just like read and occasionally talk to each other. But it would be this like very passive, like we're just watching each other live and shit like that. So yeah, it was pretty important because then I could like stay in touch and like hang out with my my friends in some capacity.
Right. And when did you start drag when you lived at home, or was this something that came about in Toronto?
No, I started. Well, what's interesting is like the first time I ever got in drag, I was in like the first time I ever consciously was like, I'm dressing up as a lady and not just like putting on a costume or like playing random bits of dress up was seventh grade. It was for Halloween. But like drag didn't come about until I was living in Toronto and until I was out of OCAD. So I went to OCAD, as did you, Ontario yes. College of Art and Design, what's up? Mm-hmm. I'd love my money back. I'm just kidding. I actually found that process very valuable, but we can talk about that mm-hmm. later. But I went to OCAD and I'm a printmaker. So I was doing these prints and photographs that were of my face in different like types of makeup. Like I learned how to do lips first because I wanted to do all these prints of like big, sexy, pouty lips. And I couldn't find reference photos for what I wanted specifically. So I was like, I'll just learn how to do it myself. And I always thought makeup was really neat. I always had like a thing for special effects makeup and seeing the behind the scenes of that. But I also always really loved getting my face painted when I was little. Like if there was a face painter anywhere, sign me up. Like witch, clown, always like I loved a good face paint. And now it's funny that it irks me so much when people refer to makeup as face paint. which happens. People will walk up to a drag queen and be like, "I love your face paint." And I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" It's like you've never met anyone. But yeah, I started learning makeup to aid in like my other artistic practices. And then I realized I like really, really enjoyed it as a medium and found it just really fascinating. And I was really fascinated with the like transformative properties of makeup. I've always been really inspired by an artist that like I know you know, but for our audience members, a photographer named Cindy Sherman, who like photographs herself as a bunch of different like self-made characters in her own universe. So she's done portraits of herself as like Real Housewives types. She's done portraits of herself as Renaissance painting. She's done portraits of herself as other celebrities. Like she was always a really big artistic influence of mine from like probably from like 17 on. And yeah, she was like, yeah, she was super inspiring. So I was really interested in the idea that I could like change my face into another face and I could change my features into other features. I just thought that was really, really cool.
And then also have the freedom to like live fully in that moment the way Cindy did by like memorializing it and putting it on show. It's very
Completely.
much the same where I'm making this art, and now for you in this moment, that's all I am.
Completely. Yeah, I feel like that's actually a really, really good way to put it. Because the reason I came to drag and the reason I kind of started falling in love with it so much more right out of art school was that so I had been practicing makeup for a long time, like about 2 years by the time I started going out. And I kind of had like an idea of what I wanted my face to look like, and I had a certain set of skills. Not completely skilled in makeup, but I knew I was okay when I started and not coming from like a completely beginner place as a lot of other queens. So that kind of gave me a little bit of a leg up. Although looking at my early drag photos, I'm like, yeah, okay. You need to change some things. But it's also like for beginner drag, I'm still like very impressed with myself.
You can see your foundations.
100%. And you could see the things I was good at and the things that were gonna need work. When I started going out in drag, I had been out of art school for like less than a year. I had worked as a personal assistant for one of my former profs for a year and a half. And that ended r not great. And so I was like, I need something new to do. And so I just like started practicing drag more, but I still wasn't really engaging with like queer nightlife at all. 'Cause I had gone out once when I was like 18 in first year with a fake ID. And I was like way heavier. And I had like big baggy jeans with patches all over them. And I was wearing like a ratty hoodie. And I had like emerald green hair, like in bangs down to my chin. And I was with my like hot twink friend who had just come out that was visiting the city. And we went to a bar. And I was just like gawked out. Like I had a third eye. And I was like, yeah, I don't really relate to this, and I don't really feel the need to engage with this. So I didn't go back to like going out in queer nightlife culture and like until I started doing drag. But yeah, I fell in love with it because I had come out of this art school frustration of like spending a lot of time conceptualizing work, then making the work, then hanging the work, or exhibiting it, and just hoping that someone would enjoy it or relate to it or buy it. And the thing I always say that I love about drag is that I get to create the work, sell it, and enjoy it being consumed all at the same time.
Yeah, and get the reward in the moment too.
Completely. It's the most satisfying art form I've ever participated in, 100%.
So you didn't have somebody put you in face first. You started
Nope.
exploring your face on your own.
I sure did.
So then what kind of mentorship and what kind of teachers did you have along the way?
Well, in terms of mentorship with drag, it was very. My old boss was actually a big mentor in terms of cultural knowledge because she was a pop culture writer and is to this day like one of the smartest, most interesting people I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. She got me into a lot of like deeper niche alternative queer culture. So I consider her a big mentor. And she bought me a gift once that was a few different things from the Matt collection that Cindy Sherman did. Like Cindy Sherman ended up doing a Matt collection and I was like talking about it one day at her house while I was working or whatever. And she ended up buying me some things of it as like a grad gift when I left OCAD, which was very sweet.
Oh my gosh, that's so nice.
Yeah, it was like an eyeshadow palette that I don't have it anymore, but I still had two of the shadows until very recently. But yeah, so she was a huge mentor. And then like my drag family, I really, really like valued in terms of mentorship because it wasn't that they were actively trying to teach me anything, but it was much more of like a live by example. It was cool that I could watch these people, the House of Filth in Toronto, and like specifically my drag aunties, Judy Virago and Iggy Lizard, and my drag sister, Nancy Bocock. Back when we started, it was just the four of us. I found them just super inspiring by being able to just live and do and perform in exactly the way they wanted. And I found that very inspiring. So in terms of drag mentorship, they're very big. And then I owe a lot to Daytona Bitch as well, who was kind of my village mentor. I worked with her a lot on Monday nights at Crews and Tangos when I first started working in the village. And I learned a lot from her in terms of hosting skill and how to hold a room, but also just in terms of performance technique. Like watching her, I really learned kind of how to do drag in the village in a way that I could make it work for myself. And she's still a really good friend, and we're still like tight and in touch. But yeah, I would say those are probably my biggest mentors in terms of drag for sure.
Going back to the Allison who liked to, play games and chat online, and
Yeah.
being that your drag is such a communication, I wondered if you could speak a little bit now on how your drag of today and then the internet and communication interests of teenage you, how those two things have come together and worked.
It's interesting because I think I always wanted, like, I remember recording like little radio shows on like my micro cassette recorder. I had like a little dictaphone that I had found in like a desk at my mom's work from someone that had like left. And I was like, can I keep this? And she was like, yeah, go for it. So I had this little like micro cassette player that, like, when we got a digital answering machine that didn't need tapes anymore, I remember like hoarding all of our little tiny tapes and being like, these are mine now. But like I would record like little skits and like radio shows and things like that. And like I think I always just wanted some sort of like platform to be heard. Like I loved acting and I always I acted a lot as a kid and I loved being characters, but I also really loved this idea of being able to be like a presence on my own and just have people listen. It's interesting that these kind of like long form group hangouts I used to have with my friends online, or these like little tapes that I used to record these like sketches and shows, have turned into my current career path being like a digital drag streamer, which is very cool. Because I do, like, we've talked about this before, but it makes so much sense that this is where things have gone for me. Like, it really feels like, not an out of nowhere shift for my drag in the slightest. Like it feels very correct.
It's kind of wild too that you wouldn't have maybe on your own thought to do something like this had you not been compelled to by a global pandemic.
Completely. I would have never considered how much I would enjoy streaming, and I would have never considered how quick I'd be able to like pick it up and the technical knowledge of it, and I never would have considered what an audience there was for it at all.
But as with your other passions that you have talked about so far, do you not think that when you truly feel passionate about something, that the learning really just flows on its own?
Oh, 100%. I feel like when I've got interest in something and when it's really touching that part of my brain that feels that passion for creative outlets, it's so much easier. And I feel like that's kind of why I have floated around or like how I dip my toes into so many different things because I get hyper focused on stuff. Like, I just like when I want to learn a new painting technique, it's like that's all I'll do for like a few days. Or like I got really into like crocheting a bunch of years ago and I just like crocheted constantly. It's just like because when you're enjoying it, it's so much easier to learn. You just want to learn it, you know?
And thinking of that, it reminds me of we just had we're so lucky. We had Coco Peru come on a show, WW West End, that Allison Chains hosts. And something that she said during that is I can't quote her, but it was along the lines of, if you have something that you really want to do and you really want to make something of, involving other people and having a goal and deadline that matters to others is a really strong drive. I feel like there's often been times where, with the streaming stuff, it's brought me joy to know that it can't become, for me, one of my, like, I'm going to learn to knit, I'm going to learn to do that, because we're a community of it now.
Yeah, I found what she was saying about that just crazy inspiring, being like, hold yourself accountable and like make sure that someone kind of needs it out of you and like give yourself deadlines because I'm fucking terrible without deadlines. Like if I'm just working for the sake of working and doing what I want to, I will find a billion and one ways not to get something done, or like my brain will concoct so many different things I could be doing instead. But like with drag, especially, like I've always felt this about drag is like if I was nervous for a show, the thing I always told myself was, well, you have to go on anyway. Like you're booked and there's an audience of people out there and you have to go on stage anyway. So whether you're nervous or you're not nervous, you have to do it. So you might as well enjoy yourself.
The fear of getting in front of the audience and doing it is much less than the fear of what you do to yourself by just, like, bailing, you know, like,
100%.
yeah.
And the stream is a lot like that too, where it's like, because we've got an audience, it's like, if I'm nervous about any of these interviews, or if maybe I'm having like a lousier day, or I'm not feeling great, knowing that these things are coming up and that I have an obligation to like see this audience tonight and see these people and make this thing is always A, and lift me out of a funk, but B, enough to like really help me get the work done and like do my job well.
So I think that kind of leads into our next section about flow and creativity, and specifically the writer's block, the sense of hitting a dead end in your creativity, finding like a stall in your flow. It happens to the best of us. And so how do you get over that?
It's funny, I was actually just having a conversation about that this morning with my partner because I don't know if I have the best advice in getting over this because I'm feeling kind of stuck in one of those right now a little bit. But not with the stream or with drag at all, but with some of my other creative passions where it's like last night I sat down to draw some stuff and to paint some stuff and it just like wouldn't come out and I was getting so frustrated over it. And like, I think the thing is that you need to like not let that fear of what could go wrong or what's stopping you get in the way of creating what you want to create. It does go with the thing we were just saying about the audience is there anyway, and you've just got to do it no matter what. It's like I get, especially with drawing, it's like I get so concerned about being like, well, I've only got this many sheets of decent paper and I've only got this many hours to make something. And I don't want to ruin it with like, you know, fucking it up, buying a new technique that looks like shit or whatever. But the thing is, it's like, no one's pre-ordered this artwork from me. No one's expecting this of me. I'm making it for myself. So you might as well just create it for yourself. I think I need to take that advice myself more often is that like you need to be doing things for you and because you enjoy them and not thinking of what anyone else will think of them, if you can sell it, if you can, you know, turn it into something else. I think it's really key to like for any artist to remind themselves that like they need to not only enjoy the final product, but enjoy the process. Because it's like, yeah, I don't know. I think I do need to remind myself more often than not when I'm creatively stuck that I'm doing these things because I enjoy them and not because I want to feel like a bound obligation to them.
I feel like another part of that too is that artists nowadays in like a commercial landscape, every idea feels like it's very precious and needs to be executed. And on the same token that you have to be enjoying your process, you also have to lose the fear of throwing an idea away when it's not
Yeah,
working.
completely.
Burning it down and look and starting again, even in the same vein, but just I feel like that commercialized art has really made us feel like if we're hating something, we have to keep going on it. And yeah, sometimes you just need to bin it.
Completely. It's okay to abandon an idea. Like, I think I've learned that a lot more in the last couple years, but especially during the pandemic. Of being like, you know, in the beginning, especially, everyone was kind of doing this thing where we're throwing handfuls of spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks, you know what I mean? And I feel like I'm kind of moving into a new phase where I need to be okay with trying a bunch of different stuff and being okay if those things don't work, you know? But yeah, I agree. That's very apt that I think people do need to realize that it's like, it's okay to like not fulfill everything if it's not making you happy. But that's the other thing is like I feel like the pandemic has just put me in such a state of being like, how can I monetize on what I'm creating? Especially like with my platform and, you know, trying to grow it. It's hard not to think of like each artistic endeavor as something that I can utilize to reach people or grow my platform or monetize. Like I do need to remind myself that it's okay for me to just create work for myself.
Yeah, and actually sometimes that when you're creating work for yourself as an artist, that is really just gonna monetize on its own. Sometimes you don't have to
Completely.
put so much intent into that.
Oh, 100%.
So on the opposite scale of things, when you're not feeling any kind of block or stagnancy, what does a like fully creative, fully flowing Allison look like? And part B, how do you feel like you achieve those moments? What like leads into them being so great?
For me, it's usually that like I know when I've got a good idea. I really try to trust my instincts, and I think all creators should trust their instincts. I think it's like a really tough thing that people can't listen to their own like inner voices about stuff sometimes. But I've learned to like really trust what I think is decent, and it's funny because I try to be someone who has a lot of ideas and then pick from those ideas. But like, Aura, I used to like my partner, and I used to joke that at her old apartment, I would go down when I used to like smoke cigarettes. I would go down for a smoke break, and then I would be out there like stoned, smoking a joint, having a cigarette for like 30 minutes, and then I would come up and be like, "Babe, I've got the greatest new act idea," or like I would just like come up and I would be like, "I've got the fucking sickest idea for a mix." Or if it's in the summer, it's always, "I know what I'm doing for Queen of Halloween this year. I finally got it." And she'd be like, "Oh, like different than what you said last week." And I like, so I try to get myself in moods of creativity by like observing people I really find, whose creativity I really find inspiring. I watched a lot of Dolly Parton interviews yesterday, which I like really, really loved. But for me, when I'm working in like an idea that really speaks to me, I always know that an idea is the right idea for like artwork or for the stream even, or that's the one, you know. If I give it a lot of, if I move it up to the next tier that I'm thinking about it a lot, then that really helps me get into that state. But when I'm working, usually like, I don't know, when I'm really in a state of flow, I'm like really happy. Like I get this kind of like interesting energy where all of a sudden I snap it into it, where I can just be like kind of creating without thinking, which I love. I always talk about flow in terms of like the way that like Led Zeppelin would talk about flow, and like getting into a state of where you're performing but you don't even feel like you're performing. Like I would always feel like I would reach that flow at Cruising Tango's about an hour and a half into the evening.
we've had a lot of pretty fun people on our stream.
Yeah, we have.
So I feel like you've got to have a lot of like dream collabo moments, but an interview isn't really a collaboration. So in terms of true artistic collaboration, who would be some real aspirational people right now?
Well, I would like love to do a song with Orville Peck really badly. That's like something that's been on my brain for like a good many years now. Well, not many, but like I got to work his album launch party when he released Pony, like his first album that like really took off. I got to work that at a place called, oh, was it called Rockin' Horse? It's like a country bar down on Adelaide. And it was really, really fun. But I was like, this dude's gonna get like really famous. Like he's gonna be really big. And now he's massive. Yeah, I would love to collab with him artistically, like, or in terms of shows. Like, there are so many great drag performers I would love to work with. A lot of creative inspiration in what Peaches Christ is doing. Like, I would like love to be in a Peaches Christ show one day. Like, that would make me really happy. I would love to do something sort of like fucked up and silly and bizarre with someone like Alaska. Or like some sort of theatrical musical thing with like someone like Jinx Monsoon would be very cool.
Oh my God, yeah.
Like I would love that. I feel like her and I have a lot of similar sensibilities as well and a lot of shared interests. But yeah, I feel like my dream collaborations are kind of always like very, very big and out there, but the world just keeps getting smaller, so...
Yeah, I think if there's anything that we've learned this year, it's that things are granted to those who just ask, really. That,
100%.
That so often we're just convinced we can't ask for these things. And, you know, the people you want to work with are just other people who also find value in what, you know, we do. We're not just small.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
100%. I really want to do a collab with Regina, too, because her new album is killing me.
I caught her stream last night. For anybody listening to this, Regina Gently is a Toronto queen who has a pretty big history and in notoriously loved musical projects.
Mm-hmm. Canadian indie music darling.
Yes, absolutely. Gentleman Reg is a previous project that actually was like, I feel like had a lot of traction. But anyway, mm-hmm. I digress. She is a streamer as well, and her skills have just been improving and improving, and you should check her out.
Absolutely. Everyone should. Her new album, Don't Wait to Love Me, is available streaming everywhere now, and it's so good.
What is your next goal?
Gosh, I mean, it's funny because all my goals at the beginning of 2020 are very different than my goals now. Like my goals for this year were things like tour, perform in bigger shows, perform in bigger venues, secure bigger venues to be able to produce my own larger shows. And it's like, okay, cool. But right now my goals are just kind of like keep growing the stream as like best as we can and just keep getting more traction for it. Cause right now it's like the funny thing I feel about our show is that there's not many things that I feel like we need to change on our end. We just need a wider audience. Like I feel like we've got a product that's like enjoyable as is right now. It just needs more people to be seeing it, you know?
You kind of have met that goal, though, of the start of 2020 about the bigger venues. It's just that you're able to create as big a venue as you like right
Completely.
Now, and it's just virtual.
Completely. It's very true. Yeah, my current goals are, like, I would really love to be making more music right now. Like, I've got to save up for this little piece of equipment that I need to be able to plug in all my instruments into my computer. So I'm just waiting to be able to buy that and then hopefully make a bunch of music over the winter, which I think I would really enjoy doing. I would say those are kind of like my current big goals is to like work on more music. And again, like speaking of Regina, like I just found that album so inspiring because it's made by like two amazing producers from Montreal and Regina. And like, that's it. And
wow.
Like, I find people like Grimes really inspiring for that because she's entirely self-produced. Like her whole first album she made on GarageBand in her bedroom. And like people like Billie Eilish right now where like her and Phineas, like her brother, are just creating stuff out of their house. Like I think it's such a good time to be inspired to just do things for yourself. And like I've got a pretty big breadth of like how to go about creating that now. I just need to like get my hands on the tools.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say those are kind of like my long-term goals right now. And just like, yeah, just continuing to be kind of fearless and like charge forward into whatever. I feel like that's kind of a constant goal, is to just continually be able to like encourage myself to really go for things.
To really etch a palante.
Eshe Palante, 100%.
I feel like it is a boring direction to ask you what advice you would have for drags just starting out, because I feel like we hear that a lot from lots of queens.
Yeah.
So I would like to know, as somebody who has really had quick success as a stream host, what would your tips be about somebody who's just starting and who really wants to do it right?
For streaming or for drag?
For streaming.
Oh, I would say like, do you know what's funny? As I actually read a lot of threads about this on the Twitch Reddit, because I started subscribing to the Twitch Reddit when we started streaming together. And I find a lot of really interesting advice on there, but I think my biggest piece of advice is like authenticity. Like, don't try to emulate what you see anyone else doing on their streams, or don't try to do like the things that you think work best for someone else. Like, just hang out and find what works for you. I mean, our whole stream came out of just like, you, me, and Champagne hosting Drag Race and just sitting around smoking pot and talking and like making all these inside jokes, having these like running silly themes. And we would add, we've added sound effects and we've added filters, and now with the radio show we've built this entire giant house like online for us to play around in. But I think it all stems from like, be authentic and the work will tell you how it wants to be made. Like, if you amazing. It could not be more well timed.
Aaron will allow us to have a pow, 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 pow,
I hope
pow.
so.
That better stay in the final cut.
I hope so.
It's cool to hear though that you so quickly went to the Reddit and just were like, what do people do? What's the chatter around this? I feel like when I started getting into streaming myself, after my very, very first one, I was like, oh, she needs to look into this, because I clearly was not. Yeah, there's a certain like formula to it, but you definitely have to make it your own.
That's the thing, is like there are certain things that you can intuit, like you don't want a ton of dead air, or you want to be able to have topics that you can like discuss or something that you're doing. Because the thing is, like on a stream, no one wants to watch you do nothing. They can watch you do nothing at home, so you've gotta have like something to do, but it doesn't need to be anything more than talking. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't need to be this like wild, crazy thing, and it doesn't need to just be gaming. I feel like a lot of people really try to bend their personalities to the gamer culture of Twitch, which makes a lot of sense because it's the like OG purpose for the platform. But now that we're entering this like newer era of like everyone taking their shit online and like having more access or interest in live streaming, that I feel like a lot of people try to be like, okay, what games can I play or whatever. But it's like, I've never really been much of like, all the games I play are like not games people would want to watch me play, I don't think. But like, yeah, I just think have something to do that you enjoy and just trust that people will want to watch you enjoy something.
Do you feel like you've watched other drag performers in your sort of stratosphere make any things that you see as like crucial mistakes to bringing their work online?
To be honest, like I think the biggest mistake right now is hosting shows only on Zoom, unless they need that platform in terms of privacy. I think like Zoom shows are really great if you want to have shows that feature nudity or things that wouldn't be allowed on Twitch. But in terms of Yeah, in terms of crucial mistakes, I really feel like working with Twitch and working with a program like OBS or Streamlabs OBS, which is like open broadcast software, teaches you how to get like a really smooth product. And I think like it's a huge testament to your skill with the shows that we make that we were able to start out with something that looked professional. We were able to start out with something that looked like it should be taken seriously. And so I think that's a big key is like your talent is one thing and one thing that will keep the audience there, but you have to be able to present that talent on a beautiful stage and in a beautiful
Yeah,
package.
I
And
fully agree.
I think that's one of my I think that's one of my big things is that people need to or should be focusing a lot more on how it's presented as well.
And everybody in this era now knows what a Zoom call looks like. And for most of us, it looks like a work meeting. And I feel like even if you have the footage saved from your Zoom-only shows in the archives over time, it's going to be a sea of the exact same looking work meeting era appearance. And that's just, I feel like that's just not going to be compelling content to hold on
It's
to.
true. And the thing is, it's like the greatest thing about Twitch is that it has that kind of YouTube-esque community-based culture around it where you can go back to our page and look at clips of our streams and you can see these like little bits of things that exist. Like our full streams only exist on the page for a couple weeks at a time, but with a Zoom meeting, like you do it and that's gone.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just feel like there's a lot of tech hiccups when it comes to not doing things on Twitch. I mean, listen, we've had our fair share of tech hiccups as well. Like that time some drag queen came into our studio and unplugged the webcam during our radio show so they could plug in their phone. Like who would do that? I did that last week. It was
The
me.
trespassery of it all.
Oh my God. Just like, oh, that is like that's my maybe like my biggest cringe moment of like, I can't believe I just did this in a really long time. Like a really long time.
Oh, poor thing. It
It's okay. It's okay. Because it all ended up working out and you were able to fix it in like a matter of minutes, which
I
is
get
so fucking
faster every
impressive.
time at like one of us tripping over something. It's getting to be a skill.
One day we'll just have a studio where all of this is just built and set up all the time, and the wires are covered, and we're just.
Yes, they're all
Because
retractable from the wall and zip back in when we're done.
it's amazing. I don't think a lot of people know this, but like the reason the channel is on Speakeasy Tattoo and like the like whole branding of this is like we're in your tattoo shop, we're in the kitchen of your tattoo shop while we do the show.
Yeah, and that this channel was built before COVID, only months before, because I wanted to showcase the daily life of Speakeasy in just kind of like a passive meditative calming stream. And it's been repurposed. And Speakeasy is a queer art space, so it makes sense that our virtual spaces, but yeah, sometimes I wonder about that branding and if we're gonna have to separate it into its own entity, but anyway,
Who knows?
yeah. We're at the final section of our show.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, it's called Passions Lately.
Okay.
And it's very simple, Allison. I just want to know, what are you passionate about lately? It can be literally anything.
Lately, I'm really passionate about my New Year's resolution was learning how to play the intro to Crazy on You by heart on guitar. And it's like almost there. It's like there. It just needs to be like tightened up. I'm passionate about getting that really good. For the first time in my life, like this calendar year, I've been really passionate about keeping my home nice because I moved in with my partner last October, like a year ago. And I've got to like live in this beautiful place that we've like built together and that I've like worked to like keep organized and have everything in its place. And I was like living very much the opposite of that for like a decade before. So I'm very passionate about like my home, which is interesting because it's like it's a good time to be passionate about it, I guess.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's
Well, I think the
true.
pandemic has really made me realize like how much I value this space. Like I loved it before and like there were moments I would literally look at my partner with like tears in my eyes, being like, I can't believe I live like this now. Like it was my like living situation was like shit before, and it was all of my own doing. Well, no, that's not true. My mess and my clutter was all of my own doing. My living situations being shit were not my fault. and that is no shade to any of my former roommates that might be listening, except for three. Fine, they're not gonna listen to this.
Oh, I love it.
But yeah, I'm really passionate about like my, I feel like this year I've been able to take more time for myself and work on myself as a human being outside of 7 years in a row of intense, constant drag work. So I'm like, I don't know, I'm pretty passionate about self-maintenance right now, even though I've been having, I don't know, occasional dips lately, but it's a global pandemic, so I'm trying not to beat myself up too bad.
Yeah. Although for a creative like yourself, or I think I can relate in a way where you have so many venues that this interest and passion can go down. It is really nice when you get into these workflows that isn't about a product, but it's about comfort and caring for yourself.
Yeah.
And it's so nice when a busy brain of an artist can actually get passionate about yourself and not a product. So kudos.
Thank you. It's really hard. Like, it's a constant learning experience. And it's one of those things where I look at other people and I'm like, you maintaining like your own life is just second nature to you. But for me, it's like, not that at all. Because it's like, I have to maintain, it's not that it's not that at all. But I think a lot of my unhappiness in like many years past, like not currently, but prior, came to the fact that I was like not focusing on like myself as a human being or what I needed. You know, it was just always, no matter what I bought for myself, it was, how can I make this work for work? Or how can I find a way to justify that this is for drag, or that a gig can pay for this, or like whatever, you know? It's nice to like do nice things for me now.
And in turn for your partner too.
100%.
Living with somebody, and yeah, it's a good time for that to be a passion as well. I feel like you and I also have been able to chat lots about our baking and cooking.
Yeah, I'm very passionate about baking and cooking. That is very true. I think I might make some bread today, actually.
Oh, see, bread is something I have not got into, would love to get into, because I have a couple of those cast iron really nice, like,
I was literally just going to ask if you have a Dutch oven. I have a recipe that's great if you don't have one, and I have a recipe that's great if you do have one.
Oh, see, that's the thing. I see everybody on Instagram being so cool and, yeah, and making it in their Dutch oven. And I'm just like,
well, so I didn't have a Dutch oven until, I want to say, like, August. It was, like, the first time we went to go visit my parents in their backyard since, or maybe it was July. It was probably July. It was, like, the first time we went to go visit my parents in their backyard since COVID had started. And my parents were like, oh, we got you something, because my dad and I had been talking on the phone a lot about baking bread in like the beginning of the pandemic, and I had been making stuff just on like sheet pans, which is fine. But they like got me this cute like red MasterChef Dutch oven from like Canadian Tire or something like that. And it's amazing, and I use it for everything now.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, I made that dope ass ramen that I sent you the other day. I made that in the Dutch oven.
Oh God, the pictures of that. I wish that we could put a visual through a podcast.
Well, that's the other thing, is I feel like you and I probably have the similar feelings of plating. Do you love making food look nice? Because I love making food look nice.
Okay, I do, but sometimes I have anxiety about everything.
Yeah, preach, amen.
So, yeah. So sometimes while I enjoy making the food, I start to panic that I don't have time for other things. And so I'll eat it real fast. However, I do like that. I want to say, though, my partner, John, always plates things like they're out of a magazine. And it can be the most basic ass food. And he'll always say, oh, first bites with the eye.
Oh, my God. I love that. That's such, my cousin, who's like a cook, says that as well. He's always like, you taste with your eyes first. And I'm like,
I can't ever tell him that, because he'll be like, see, told you.
He said that once to my grandpa at like a dinner, like my cousin, who's like younger than me. I think he's like, God, how old is he? He's probably like 20 now. He like went through the trouble of like making my grandpa and like their family like dinner when they were like up north visiting my grandpa or something like that. And my grandpa was getting mad at the fact that they like weren't eating soon enough because my cousin was busy like plating it and making it look nice. And my cousin was like, Grandpa, you taste with your eyes first. And if you've met my grandpa, that's not true at all. Like, he's not tasting with anything but his mouth first. That's for damn sure. I don't even know if he can see it. No, I love plating stuff. I just think it's like such a nice little thing. Like last night I made tacos for us and I always bring over our big wooden cutting board with all of the things in little piles, like a little taco charcuterie almost.
That is
It's
really
fun.
nice. I want to shout out to anybody listening to this that if you follow a really amazing Indigenous artist on Instagram named Chief Lady Bird, she has been plating these incredible lunches that she snacks on in her little private studio on her residence, and it is it is the cutest plating. Honestly, if you're into food plating, please go follow Chief Lady Bird. She also does really like sexy eating
Oh, I love
videos,
that.
and oh yes, so good. And actually, sorry, I said residence, I meant reservation.
Cool.
Okay, so I could go on and on and on with you,
Back at
Allison,
you.
but we're at the end of our time on Eye to Eye. So now would be a great time to let the listeners know about your social media, anything upcoming you'd like to promote, or just in general, let them know where they can follow you and keep up with your
You
work.
can find me on Instagram at Allison Chains, AllysinChayness, and the same on Facebook. And I post about all my shows and the stuff I'm doing there. But right now, the best way you can catch me is at twitch.tv/speakeasytattoo every single Thursday for Speakeasy Radio for our live interactive call-in show. That is, I've been describing it to people as a mixture between Pee-wee's Playhouse and Watch What Happens Live. Which I think is apt and very fun.
Very apt,
And
yes.
it's a really good time. And those are the best places you can find me right now because I'm not performing in person anywhere. I was for a little bit, but then the village in Toronto had a COVID scare, and my partner and I both kind of decided that I can wait a little bit to go back to working in the bars just for our own safety.
It was a real spooky
It
scare.
was. Yeah, it was pretty wild. I mean, not that anyone would know because it didn't get any media attention, but
No, but I heard that there was one COVID positive queen for every day there is in February.
oh my God. Ugh.
Heard that number and I was like, please shut the fuck up right
Well, that
now.
was the thing is like this was all going on and I was all stressed out, you know, because like we had talked a lot during that because literally the only people I'm
Course.
seeing right now are like, you are my coworker now. So it's like I have one coworker and it's you. And so I see you, but you have all of your coworkers at the shop during your other career that you are balancing at the exact same time. So my instant anxiety was like, have I given every single person at Speakeasy Tattoo COVID-19? And luckily that wasn't the case. But no, it was all of this was going on and like my partner just kind of voiced that they were like, I would pay you not to go. Like they were just saying that it was freaking them out every time I had to go to the village. So
Very
once this I,
fair.
exactly and honestly like the thing is like the village will be there. There will be performance opportunities after this, and things are getting cold, and I don't think we're going to be doing bar culture for much longer this fall anyway. And luckily, I've got an amazing new manager at that job. Shout outs to Alicia Stewart at Cruise and Tangos, who is just like the best boss we've ever had there.
That's
So
so
when I
great.
said I was just like, I'm feeling trepidatious about going back and feeling hesitant, she was so kind about it and so understanding. But yeah, you can catch me in the digital sphere right now, all over twitch.tv/speakeasytattoo. And that's like pretty much it. That's pretty much it
My
right now.
final, I have one final question for you,
No, I don't have
and
Cameo. I
well,
don't.
I hope you'd at least take it seriously if you did. Allison, I feel like I know what it might be. What is the most recent thing that has happened to you that has made you purely happy? Was it just my shade right
I
there?
mean, that was pretty close. To be honest, that interview that we did with Coco Peru on Friday was a lot of pure happiness. I kept having these kind of like waves of I don't even know how to describe it, but like the minute we got off the stream, my whole body like unclenched. Not because I was like stressed, but because I was just so in the moment and like just like living it so much. And I just thought that conversation was so incredible. And I just adore her and like have so much fucking respect for her work and her hustle and like
Even more so after speaking
so
to
much
her.
more. Like so much more.
And I know what you mean. Like, as I was watching it, I would feel like, oh, this is surreal. And then it would throb into like a different kind of joy. And then that joy and
Yeah.
pride just kept rising and rising. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's this like overwhelming physical feeling of being inspired and joyful and proud of yourself all at the same time.
Completely.
So.
I also have to say that one of those moments of pure joy, and like this might be even more just like a moment of pure joy and nothing else, but looking over at you and I watching Tammy Brown and her accompanist Michael singing Don't Let It Bring You Down by Neil Young.
Going,
Just being like, what
what's
is
happening?
happening? And that was amazing. That was pure joy. That was
Yeah,
incredible.
that really was. That's happened to me several
Yeah.
times
Moment for the
throughout
books.
our most recent ones have really made me feel like, what the fuck is happening? Like, we are so lucky.
Yeah, we really are. We really are.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me on this special episode of Eye to Eye today,
My
Allison.
pleasure.
I have been your host, Lizzie Renault, the Lizza. You can follow me at Lizzie Tattoo on Instagram. My channel is twitch.tv/speakeasytattoo. If you like The Real Housewives as much as I do, you can also come join me on Sundays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time at twitch.tv/sipandsee to really rip into the one percenters. Make sure to subscribe to Eye to Eye Podcast, everyone, to keep up to date with new episodes weekly. And thank you, listeners, for being here with us. Now go outside. Aaron will be here when you're back.
This episode of Eye to Eye was edited by Dylan Newman and the theme song written and performed by Emily Easley. Make sure to rate and subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy podcasts today.